Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. When you're looking at a piece of art on display at a museum, you most likely have the added option to listen to audio commentary that may go into detail about the materials and processes used by the artist, as well as underlying motivations and concepts that the artwork was meant to invoke. I know there's many times when, without that extra explanation, I'm left feeling like I have no clue what the artist was hoping I, the viewer, would get out of my experience with their work, and I feel like I'm missing out. San Francisco's Museum of Modern Art has launched a new podcast called Raw Material, which goes deep to engage its listeners with the abstract concepts that tie many modern artworks together, without the listener needing to step foot into a gallery, or even to look upon the artwork in question at all. Instead, you experience the motivations and inspirations of the artist in audio form only. In this episode of Raw Material, they dive into the concepts of ceremony and shamanistic rituals, starting with the practice of ingesting ayahuasca. So, if you happen to be eating right now, or sensitive to discussions of bodily functions, you might want to tune out for the next 5 minutes or so. We'll be here for you when you return.
When you see this shamanic ritual, so everything is there. Like, you know, from the visual art, and dance, music, costume, and props, they are healing through the music. They're healing through the dance. They're using the art as a healing method. And that's the medicine. That's how I want to see myself as an artist in that way.
This is Raw Material, a podcast by SF MoMA. I'm Ross Simonini, and I'll be your host for a season of Art and the Unknown. This is how the ceremony begins. The shaman blows rhythmically across the top of a glass jar that contains a kind of soup, a sickly-looking deep green smoothie. It's a medicine called ayahuasca. It's two plants, a vine and a leaf, that have been plucked from the rainforest and cooked over a stove for hours. The blowing is how the shaman blesses the medicine, and as he does it, you can smell it wafting out of the jar. And if you drank it before, as more and more people in the US seem to be doing these days, you might get a twinge of nausea, because you know that purging will most likely be a part of the night. The shaman calls it getting well. When the sun goes down, the medicine drinking begins. This is the hour when spirits come out. You drink a cup of the ayahuasca, and it tastes extremely bitter, but also a little sweet, and your stomach immediately starts to groan, not just because of the intensity of the medicine, but because you've been fasting all day, abstaining from any strong foods like garlic or alcohol, so that your system is highly sensitive and everything about the experience will be intensified. When you're done drinking, you hand the cup back to the shaman, and you lie down in the dark in silence, and you wait for the music to begin.
Panabokida, panabokida, acedoni medicine, acedoni medico, acedoni panagi, Pana pana bayenki.
These are recordings from a recent ceremony I took part in, led by a man named Santi Paro. He works in the shamanic tradition and as a musician writing and performing his own music. For almost a decade, he studied with Master Ayahuasqueros, most recently with the Shipibo Kanibo people in Peru, one of the birthplaces of the ayahuasca ceremony.
The particular families that I work with are in a little community called San Francisco, which is actually the biggest Shipibo community. It's kind of like a little Shipibo suburb at this point, because things are really modernized.
In Peru, he learned about the traditional diets and rituals and the music of the ceremonies, the spells, what they call Icaros. That's the voice of his teacher, Don Emilio, singing in Icaro.
So Icaros are the multi-dimensional language of the medicine. It's different than a song, because it's not something that you learn and then you recite it the same way every time. It doesn't work like that. The plant itself can transmit an Icaro directly to a person. And so the Icaro then has a melody and it has a geometry. And, you know, the melody follows the geometry. But the function of them is to realign the energy body of the person, so where things are out of order. You know, you're singing the surgery that is being performed.
In ceremony, the art form of the Icaro is one of the shaman's strongest tools for healing and for bringing the patient deeper into the experience.
The ritual of a ceremony, the way that a container is built, and then also the Icaros themselves, they're all magical. It's a formulaic approach to opening other dimensions. There's, you know, high magic or white magic, and then there's black magic as well. So ayahuasca itself is kind of like pure force. This is the way that I describe it, the way that I understand it. In itself, you know, it has no, it's not necessarily benevolent, it's not necessarily predatory. What matters is how it's approached, and how it's approached and how it's worked with from the facilitator or the shaman is dependent upon the amount of purification they've already gone through, the amount of training they've already gone through. So all the reasons for the abstinence and, you know, the different practices are in order to master your own energy.
The shaman, they're the artist, they're the connector. They're the connector between people to people, people to nature, people to spirit, nature to spirit.
The performance artist Dohi Lee inhabits the role of shaman in her work. The masks she wears, the costumes she makes, the dances she does, it all comes out of shamanism.
When you see the Korean traditional dance and music, it all came from shamanism. That's the roots.
For her, art comes out of shamanism. The two practices are inextricable. You can't have one without the other, and they both serve the same function.
The shaman's role is all about communication. So it's all about communication that something was disconnected. You know, not only maybe your body that disconnected, so shaman helped your body to connect. So you more find yourself. And also she also tried to find a connection that maybe your body or your spirit is, you know, supposed to connect through the different time being, maybe from the past, your life. she pulled that out, that spirit, to communicate it. It's all about communication. You know, almost 85-90% are women. The woman has that power. They're going through a lot, undergoing through, you know, so much pain and hardship in their lives, but that kind of shows about this matriarchal, the strength. And that's the things that we need so badly now.
Lee sees her shamanic work as healing, not just for individuals, but for society. This is also how Joseph Beuys saw himself as an artist 50 years ago, a shaman healing the wounds of the world.
That is precisely what the shaman does in order to bring about change and development. My intention is to stress the idea of transformation and substance. It could be described as the deepest root of the idea of spiritual life, the transformation of life, nature, and history through concrete processes.
That's Beuys speaking in the documentary Transformer by John Halpern. Beuys is certainly the best known artist to refer to himself as a shaman. And like Santiparo, he grew up outside of a shamanic tradition and had to arrive at it through his art. That's Joseph Beuys performing in 1968. For him, the voice was a direct transmitter of energy. What he's saying here is, yes, 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 yes. No, 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 no. He released this recording as 100 reel-to-reel tapes, each inscribed in felt squares. Felt was one of his primary mediums, and there's a story why. During World War II, while aboard a German bomber, Beuys crashed into the Crimean wilderness. He was left for dead by the search parties, but then the Tatars, the indigenous people of the area, pulled his body out of the plane, covered him in felt, and slathered his body in fat, supposedly restoring him to health and saving his life. But the thing was, he never really met the Tatars, not while conscious. And the same goes for the felt. He only experienced it while unconscious. So when he uses elements like fat and felt to make his art, they help him dive into the unconscious, like a shaman does, and produce artifacts from the other world. It's all a way for him to re-enter that place of myth, because most people think the story is just an invented tale of origin. A lot of myth is interwoven into Beuys's biography. But the fiction doesn't necessarily undermine the story, because all of Beuys's art comes out of a place that is between myth and truth. For one performance called I Like America and America Likes Me, he flew into New York, was wrapped entirely in felt, laid onto a stretcher, and was taken straight from the plane into an ambulance. He wasn't ill or injured, he just wanted to make sure his feet never touched American soil. The ambulance shuttled him to a small gallery space where he lived with a coyote for 3 days. For protection, he wrapped himself in felt and carried a cane as a kind of staff, making symbolic gestures and movements. At first, the animal tore up the space, but eventually it began tentatively interacting with Beuys, even allowing for a final goodbye hug. When it was over, Beuys left the same way he came, and he claims to have never laid his feet or eyes on America while there. Communing with transdimensional healing, by combining the sensitivities of the shaman with the tools of the artist, Boyce opened up a new intuitive dimension for future generations of artists.
First time I think I remember seeing like a Joseph Boyce installation was in Dia Beacon, where you meander yourself to a maze of felt.
Terence Coe is one such artist. Like Boyce, he makes objects that vibrate with intention, many of which come out of ritualistic performances.
I think what touches me about him, that it wasn't just a physical thing. It was like you could sense that it was pieces of felt, but there was an extra dimension as you were going through it, that every single part of your being, like your hairs and your thing, you felt that it was some kind of electric energy in the air. And how was that even possible? You know, because these pieces of felt is like inanimate pieces. Maybe that's what interests me of Joseph Boyce, is that there wasn't a separation between dead things and alive things. Everything was alive to him. Maybe there is some kind of like energy that he was, as a shaman, able to transmit energy itself.
This is Santi Paro. This is what he sounds like outside of ceremony.
I was born in India.
Even during ceremony, he drifts between his own songs and Icaros, so that you're never really sure what's art and what's an ancient healing modality. This is him performing with his wife, Indy, at the ceremony I attended.
I used to write a different kind of music before I came to the medicine path. And then I had a ceremony where I had an encounter with some angels. And that experience was very powerful. And, you know, I made an agreement. They made an offering and I made an agreement. And that agreement was they would place a guardian in my mind stream. Everything that was coming through would be for the benefit of consciousness and for healing, if I agreed to that. So they assisted me so that the songs that I would receive when I was inspired would always kind of come through with these lyrics that would be perfect for medicine ceremonies. And a lot of times in the beginning, they were definitely more teachings for myself, to prepare myself for what was coming. I was singing things that I wasn't really ready for yet, but I needed to hear them so that I would start living that way.
Make a noise,
Raw Material is produced by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and me, Ross Simonini. All the music you heard today was by Santi Paro, Dohi Lee, and Joseph Boyce.
Aus dem Land, das sich selbst zerstört und uns den Way of Life diktiert, da kommt Regen, bringt Waffen und Tod und hört er Frieden.
That episode comes from Raw Material's Otherworld Season, which documents artists who work within the realm of the unknown, including hauntings, magic, divination, and more. You can listen to their current series at sfmoma.org or by subscribing to Raw Material on iTunes and wherever else you listen to podcasts. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories from indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. There's another ceremony that I want to quickly bring up, and that's a wedding. In this next piece, we're introduced to a couple that met and married within a one-month span. That's right, 1 month. And no, it didn't happen on the set of a reality TV show. Their love story unfolded within their own homes. From the show Metro Connection on WAMU in Washington, D.C., Rebecca Shear shares their story.
When's your birthday?
November 29th, 1921.
And when were you born?
I was born June the 7th, 1924.
I recently met the newlyweds in their cozy one-bedroom unit at Hartfields at Easton, a senior living community on the Eastern Shore. Do you remember how the two of you first met, how you first started talking to each other?
I remember exactly where we met. Both of us were sitting in that front hall. I was in the little bitty room right by the front door. Frank wandered in, and he started telling me his life history, which was very interesting. We hit it off, and the next day he appeared at my door at 8 o'clock in the morning, so... And we've been together ever since.
What Margaret says about Frank's life history being so interesting, he was raised in Chile, where his father worked in the copper mining business. Frank attended college at Princeton, then MIT, and then he traveled the world, first with the Navy and then as a salesman. But what Margaret found most intriguing about Frank's tale?
He'd had so many wives. That was what was so interesting.
Turns out Frank had two wives before Margaret came along.
She's the third. That's one, two, three. That's right. I can even remember the names.
That's all right. We don't need to publish that.
Frank was married to his first wife for more than 60 years. She died soon after they moved to Hartfields. He was then briefly married to another woman he met there. She passed away in the fall of 2014.
I realized that I was not happy living by myself. And now I was going to go out and find a mate. She had to be over 70 years old, or I wouldn't have done it. You know, marry a young woman. No, I would not have done it. And in this place of all places, with people, it's filled with retired women around here, I thought it'd be easy to find somebody. Was it easy? No. I was turned down so many times, you can't imagine.
But that most definitely was not the case with Margaret. So Frank proposed. Do you remember if you had to think about it, or did you just say yes?
Oh, I think I just said yes.
Why?
Why? Because I found him very attractive. And we don't have much time, so might as well use it, right?
Margaret's been married once before. Her husband died about 10 years back. She's been on a few dates since then. Obviously, nothing stuck. But with Frank, she says, it was different.
The first night I met him, I think we stayed up till 12 o'clock. and hear that you don't ever do that.
Since then, there's never been a dull moment. What's the secret to keeping the magic?
That's not a problem.
No, that's not a problem. We're both healthy. One thing.
And he's very sexy. I'll put it that way if you want.
After they got married, the couple didn't go on a honeymoon. While Margaret and Frank are incredibly healthy for their age, he takes a lot of medication, and they both experience some memory loss. But for these newlyweds, none of that seems to matter.
We get along very well. Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a crossword.
We haven't had a bad word to each other.
That's right. Well, I think we really love each other, and that makes all the difference in the world.
If you ask Frank and Margaret May what advice they have for anyone else out there seeking someone to love, someone with whom to settle down and start a life.
Well, maybe not jump in it as quick as we did, but we didn't have that much time. But our choices were wonderful.
I'm Rebecca Shear.
That story first aired on the Metro Connection on WAMU. You can listen to their past episodes via their podcast on iTunes or at WAMU.org.
My mama said I can't see you no more, 'cause we don't know what love really means. She says we can't get married for 3 years or more, 'cause we're only in our teens. Oh no, we're not too young, young to get married, not too young, young to get married. What kind of difference can a 2 year make? I gotta have you now or my heart will break. Not too young, young to get married, not too young, young to get married. I couldn't love you more than
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and many, many more at KALW.org. Just look under the Programs tab. And definitely tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. I love getting your suggestions. You can just send them on over to thespot@KALW.org. And thank you for listening. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Tune in next Sunday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.